Well, tonight is the Super Bowl. Surprise to none of you. Considered to be the biggest party night of the year worldwide, even more than New Year's Day. This year, like usual, the team that I root for isn't even close to in it. That'd be the Bengals. But I don't care that much because I love funny commercials. When I'm watching TV normally, which admittedly doesn't happen very much anymore, my wife will tell you I perk up for the commercials. She would rather mute them and talk about something, but I want to watch them. It's not that they work on me very well. I've never bought a car based on a commercial or got some extra insurance to pay for things when I'm hurt because of some invasive duck or bought a burger because it was... Okay, well, usually they don't work on me. And Calvary is the same way. We'll be watching something, and she'll say, "Daddy, I want to watch the commercials." And I'll be like, "I'm sorry, we just have to wait. They aren't on yet." Like, well, don't make it happen, you know. Anyway, I thought I would take advantage of this opportunity to play my favorite Super Bowl commercial of all time. So if you get the lights back there, and we'll play this.
This man right here is my great-grandfather. He's the first cat herder in our family.
Herding cats. Don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half-wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning right here. And if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know?
You see the movies, you hear the stories, I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
EDS, managing the complexities of the digital economy.
I really like that one. And in making it had to be seriously difficult, kind of like, well, you know, herding cats. That commercial came out one year when almost all of the Super Bowl commercials that weren't beer commercials were dot-com commercials. And they were companies that we never heard from again. Now, I looked EDS up, and they're still around, so they survived the dot-com bust. But when you look at the Super Bowl and commercials, one word that comes to mind is money. Lots and lots of money. I saw a listing for a box seat at the Super Bowl in Tampa that was listed for over $200,000. I think it might have been a misprint because I found it on a weird news site, and when I went back later, it was gone. But still, if you want a seat at the Super Bowl, even a bad seat, you can expect to pay $2,000 to $3,000, and that doesn't include airfare or hotel accommodations or things like that. And if you're like me, money has been on your mind lately. Chris Jones spoke a little bit about it last week, and a month or two ago, if you're watching the news, there was a huge scandal involving a massive Ponzi scheme, which is an illegal investment model that usually ends badly, but a guy named Bernie Madoff made off with somewhere around $50 billion. This economy has us thinking about money. This past Monday, companies like Caterpillar, Pfizer, Sprint, Home Depot, General Motors, and others laid off upwards of 50,000 jobs. So my topic today is money. The sermon title in the bulletin is taken from a routine my Uncle Laverne did once where he was mocking televangelists. "Give me that green, green grass of salvation." That's all I'm going to do with that. And when I left work on Friday, a retired pastor who works at WEEC asked me on what I was preaching on today. And when I said money, he said, "Oh boy," and went back to his office. The secretary then told me about a woman she knew who went to her church for the first time, visited for the first time, and that just happened to be the Sunday where the pastor spoke about money, and she was so offended she never came back. So I was like, great, well, this is where I'm at, so this is where I'm going with the sermon. But let me tell you, my intention isn't to offend, And if you feel offended this morning by some of the things I say, maybe God's trying to tell you something. But my intention isn't to offend. I want to look at some of the things the Bible says about money and what, as Christians, we're supposed to do about it. So I have 8 it's and 3 do's. And you'll see what I'm getting at in a second. First, the first slide, please. Sorry. The little clicker isn't working today, so if I say next, next, that's why. Maybe more than the little clicker isn't working today. Oh, there we go. All right. So I have 8 it's and 3 do's. The first it. It, money, can be a god. It can be a form of idolatry. Luke 16, verse 13 says this, "No servant can serve two masters. Either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And Jesus was talking to the Pharisees here. Luke says a little bit later in the passage that they loved money. Money is one of the many things that can take the place of God in our lives. Just think about how much time we spend dealing with our money. Paying bills each month takes me at least a good evening. Tax filing is coming up. That'll take some time. And there's lots of things with money that you can just obsess about and spend a lot of time on. So money can take the place of God in your life. And yet, the next slide here, it is also a gift from God. 1 Samuel 2:7, "The Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and he exalts." There are a lot of places where it says that hard work will bring riches and laziness will bring the opposite of riches. But I bet we can all think of people who worked hard all their lives and are still poor, and people who maybe didn't work as hard and yet are doing pretty good. If you have the perspective that money doesn't belong to you, it isn't yours, it's just a loan from God that you're supposed to manage, then I can guarantee you that your attitude towards the stuff will be altered if you treat it as a gift. Next, the next it is to be shared with me. No, just kidding. The Bible teaches that money is to be shared with fellow believers. Passage from Acts 2:44-45, "All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods they gave to everyone as they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts, they broke bread in their homes, and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people." Now looking at that and the context in Acts, there is no "go and do likewise" or "do this." Yet if we want to be like the New Testament church, if we want to pattern ourselves after them, this is what they did. They shared all their possessions. They considered each other's stuff everybody's. So share possessions among believers. And that's just for believers, right? Just share. Well, Luke 6:30, which is the next slide, "Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back." That one's pretty tough, if you think about it. I could take real advantage of that. And it's given in the context of loving our enemies. Now, I think we have some discretion in what we give to those who ask us. Blanket handouts of money aren't good stewardship of resources, but we just can't turn people down out of hand. We have to be willing to share with everyone and ask the Lord to reveal how best we can help them. What do they need? What can we give them? How best we can share those resources with those who ask us. The next it is number 4 of 8. It is addicting. Money is addicting. Ecclesiastes 5:10-11. "Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them?" Money is addicting. I remember a time where I went to a gas station. I was in the checkout line, and there was a person in front of me who was collecting a $50 prize for a lottery ticket. And then they immediately bought 50 more lottery tickets with the winnings, and they went in the corner and feverishly scratched away. Or you can think of the Bernie Madoff, who spent more and more of his time trying to get more. He creates a Ponzi scheme that is doomed to failure, all to gain wealth. There are so many people who try to get ahead in life to gain possessions that they can't take with them. But if you think about it, if you don't believe that there's a place to go, then that kind of makes sense. But the love of money is addicting. Number five, it is false security. Proverbs 11:4, and then skipping to 28. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Then 28. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. Now, you got to be a little careful with Proverbs. By itself, taken out of context, you can get the idea from these verses that if you're good, then you will always prosper. But we know there are plenty of places, in the New Testament especially, where we know we are going to suffer. And that suffering is part of the Christian life. At the same time, Proverbs provides good guidelines for living. Generally, if you do good, you will prosper, and if you do bad, the consequences are you will fall. But don't trust in your wealth. It is worthless on the day of wrath. It can't save you. Going to Job, which is the next slide, 31, 24 through 25, and then 28. 24 through 25, if I have put my trust in gold or said to pure gold, you are my security. If I have rejoiced over my great wealth, the fortune my hands have gained. Verses 24 and 25 are part of a list that Job is quoting. If he had done these things. And then verse 28 says, then these also would be sins to be judged, for I would have been unfaithful to God on high. Wealth will fail, as many have found out recently. It is a false security. The next it should never be the full focus of a ministry. What I mean by that is while institutions often need resources, and sometimes it sounds like they're always asking for money, it shouldn't be the reason for their existence, to gain wealth. There needs to be a greater or further purpose. We can think of lots of contemporary examples, and the Bible gives us some as well, of people who preach a gospel for the purpose of amassing wealth. A couple verses here. 1 Thessalonians 2:5. You know we never used flattery, nor do we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. 2 Corinthians 2:17. Unlike so many, we do not peddle the word of God for profit. And then 1 Timothy 6:5 through 9, which is the next slide. And constant friction between men of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. Being paid is not why we do ministry. If it was, most of us probably wouldn't do ministry. But I like verse 8. If we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. And I've obviously had plenty of food. The next it, number 7 of 8. We're almost through all of them. It is not a signifier of righteousness. Now, ironically, we've been talking about a lot of how people who love money are bad, but sometimes I get the idea in my own life, even just running into people, that someone is good or bad based on how much they have. Honestly, you run into someone that you don't know, you look at their clothes, you look at their car, you look at their house, and think, maybe they're not quite as righteous. Maybe if they'd been better stewards, they could have more stuff. James 1, 9 through 11. This one's a little confusing, so bear with me. The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position, but the one who is rich should take pride in his low position, because he will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. A blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich man will fade away even while he goes about his business. Now, what does that mean? James is talking to Christians who are in the throes of persecution. Both the poor and the rich believer, in this case, are under persecution. The poor person is in the high position of being saved, even though he has no money, and should take pride in that under persecution. The rich man is losing his possessions, being brought down to a low position, but he should take pride in it because it is the same position of the poor man. The rich man here is too saved. Riches or no, the poor believer is equal to the rich believer. Being wealthy is not a signifier of higher righteousness. Finally, 8. It can bring judgment. Sticking to James, going to James 5, 1 through 5. Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. First, I was going to leave out verse 4, but I realized that it was kind of important to the rest of it. The reason the wealthy here call judgment on themselves is not necessarily because they have money, but the way they gained it and then what they did with it. They didn't pay their workers. They did dishonest things to gain their wealth. They actually committed 4 crimes with their money. They have hoarded it. They failed to pay their workers. They lived in luxury and indulgence, and they murdered innocent men. So it wasn't just that they were rich, but what they did with their wealth and power brought judgment. So money can bring judgment if used with the wrong attitude. So what do we do with money then? The next slide is 1, do good. Simplistic, but good. 1 Timothy 6:17 through 19, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is uncertain, so uncertain, but put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Someone with a lot of money can do a lot of good, especially if they don't consider it theirs. 2, do give to those in need. Goes back to the idea that money is to be shared. Luke 12:29-34. And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things. And your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Don't hoard it. Don't amass it. Be generous and share it. Everyone else right now in this economy is shrinking in on themselves. This is an opportunity for Christians to make a difference and show that we are different when it comes to our attitude about money, that we can be generous even when the situation is a little uncertain. Finally, 3, do be content in all circumstances. Philippians 4:10-13, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. And that's from Paul, who endured torture after torture, imprisonment, injustice, sickness. And what are we faced with? A down economy, maybe a recession, a depression on the horizon, lost jobs. And I don't want to make light of that suffering. But tonight, almost everyone in this country will sit down in front of a TV with food, clothing, and watch a Super Bowl with commercials that cost millions We'll drive away from here today in cars that cost more than most people in the world make in a year or more. So I guess this morning I'd like to provide a little perspective. I was doing our yearly budget the other day, and I was getting a little anxious with myself. A lot of things cost more this year than we had planned last January. And I was thinking, yeah, how are we going to massage these numbers to make it work for this year? And then I mentally kicked myself as hard as I could. We have gotten by on much, much less. And I needed to be reminded of the secret of being content in any and every situation. We can do everything through Him who gives us strength. Let's end with that. Father, I know I've left a lot out. But Lord, I pray that I have been faithful in what you wanted me to say today. I pray that we will learn that secret, which isn't a secret, but because we all need to learn it, it's just hard to understand sometimes, but that secret of how to be content in every circumstance. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. And maybe this uncertainty is going to teach us that, of how to rely upon you in the hard times. How to realize that money is a gift and it's not really ours. So I pray that we will be generous with our finances, that we will be wise. And I pray that as others look at the church, that they will see something different, something that amazes them, something that draws them. In your name, amen.